It's Thursday, March 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, a federal judge blocks President Trump's second travel ban.
And the purpose of the lawsuit was really to challenge the executive order because we truly felt that it was discriminatory and a violation of the Constitution, and the court agreed with us.
Also ahead, congressional leaders ask the president for proof of his charge he was wiretapped. Russian agents and hackers were responsible for the Yahoo hack. The Fed raises interest rates and will visit a place where tinkerers share tools, camaraderie, and expertise. That's all on today's International Edition. Thanks for being with us. We start off in the state of Hawaii, where a federal judge has blocked President Donald Trump's travel ban, which was set to go into effect later today. U.S. District Judge Derek Watson issued his ruling Wednesday after hearing arguments on Hawaii's request for a temporary restraining order involving the ban. The ruling applies nationwide. Hawaii Attorney General Doug Chin said he argued that the ban discriminates on the basis of nationality, and Hawaii's Muslim residents would suffer because their relatives from the six affected countries, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, would not be able to visit.
Any sort of discrimination that occurs that's unconstitutional or illegal, if it results in any harm to our state, then we're going to fight it. And I think that's the point. It's not that it has to be a large amount of harm or a little amount of harm. If you had something that's discriminating against people and it then results in a small amount of harm or large, it's still something to fight.
The ruling means that a 90-day ban on visa approvals for six majority Muslim nations will not be enforced as the White House wanted. In his ruling, Judge Watson said that a reasonable person would conclude that the stated secular purpose of the travel ban was secondary to a religious objective. Wednesday night at a rally in Nashville, President Trump told supporters the news and pledged to fight the order.
A judge has just blocked our executive order on travel and refugees coming into our country from certain countries. The order he blocked was a watered-down version of the first order that was also blocked by another judge and should have never been blocked to start with. This new order was tailored to the dictates of the Ninth Circuit's, in my opinion, flawed ruling. This is, in the opinion of many, an unprecedented judicial overreach.
Hawaii was one of four states seeking to overturn the president's ban. All of the suits argued that during the campaign, Trump and his surrogates had explicitly said they wanted to ban Muslim immigrants. The lawsuits argued that violates the Constitution's First Amendment, guaranteeing freedom of religion, as well as its Fifth Amendment, which protects against self-incrimination. President Trump said at the Nashville rally that he, as president, has the right to issue such an order in order to protect the country.
This ruling makes us look weak, which, by the way, we no longer are, believe me. Just look at our borders. We're going to fight this terrible ruling. We're going to take our case as far as it needs to go, including all the way up to the Supreme Court. We're going to win. We're going to keep our citizens safe. And regardless, we're going to keep our citizens safe, believe me.
Hawaii's Attorney General Doug Chin said that contrary to the president's comments, the ruling does not weaken America, but shows the strength of the U.S. system of government.
I disagree with the statement respectfully, but I think actually what you're seeing right now is the system working, and we, you know, we're committed to the process, and I think the U.S. government, we respected their arguments, we just disagreed, and that's why we're presenting what we're presenting.
The Justice Department had argued that aliens outside the United States have no constitutional rights to admission to the country. The Trump administration had also eliminated any references for religious minorities and exempted travelers who already had visas and permanent residence with green cards. Top leaders in the House and Senate say that the Trump administration has provided no evidence to back the president's claim that former President Barack Obama wiretapped the Trump Tower during last year's presidential campaign. Republican Congressman Devin Nunes, the head of the House Intelligence Committee, said Wednesday that he is still waiting for the White House to provide evidence to back up the president's accusations made on Twitter earlier this month.
We don't have any evidence that that took place, and in fact, I don't believe, just in the last week of time, the people we've talked to, I don't think there was an actual tap of Trump Tower. However, as I expressed last week, and I remain even more concerned about this, which are twofold. One, the incidental collection of Americans that were possibly tied to the Trump campaign that could have been leaked, similar to General Flynn. And secondly, the unmasking of Americans' names, potentially for political purposes, which we're continuing to ask more about that.
California Representative Adam Schiff, the leading Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, said that the FBI and the Justice Department have been asked for an explanation, and if none is forthcoming, the committee will subpoena the evidence next week.
To date, I've seen no evidence that supports the claim that President Trump made that his predecessor had wiretapped he and his associates at Trump Tower. Thus far, we have seen no basis for that whatsoever. We still want the Justice Department to respond to our letter. We've given them until March 20th. We're both willing to use compulsory process if that's necessary. It deeply concerns me that the president would make such an accusation without basis. We think it's in the public interest that this be addressed very openly by the director, and we certainly expect that he will.
Meanwhile, in the Senate, Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said Wednesday that the question needs to be answered for the good of the country.
The current president says that he believes that the former president, maybe not personally, but the former president through the government, surveilled his campaign in 2016. As a matter of fact, today they said they're extremely confident there was some kind of surveillance of the campaign. I have no evidence for that, but I can tell you this. That question needs to be answered because I don't think it's ever been raised before.
Graham is the leader of one of three congressional investigations into whether Russia interfered with last year's election in order to help Trump win the presidency. He said Wednesday the FBI needs to provide answers because of the far-reaching consequences if the charges are true or false.
And to me, it's very reasonable to ask the FBI and Department of Justice, did you ever seek a warrant? Was a warrant obtained from any court anywhere about the Trump campaign? If the answer is no, then we'll know that didn't happen. If the answer is yes, that would be pretty stunning to me because they would have to have probable cause. I don't know what the answer is, but I know it's the right question to ask.
Former President Obama has denied Trump's charges, saying through a spokesman they were simply false. In a Fox interview Wednesday, the president defended his decision to tweet about wiretapping before producing evidence, saying that wiretap covers a lot of things. The president added, "I think you're going to find some very interesting items coming to the forefront over the next 2 weeks." Again, Mr. Trump offered no concrete evidence for his claim. Among the top stories making headlines at this hour, suicide bombers hit the main judicial building and a restaurant in Damascus on Wednesday, leaving dozens dead. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said armed conflicts are especially virulent breeding grounds for human trafficking, resulting in forced prostitution, slavery, trade in human organs, and forced labor. Morocco's king ousted the designated prime minister. A judge in El Salvador reopened the case of the infamous El Mozote massacre during the country's civil war. And German police defused a package containing low-grade explosives that was sent to the finance ministry. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is available on our website, voanews.com, and on our mobile app. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The U.S. Justice Department announced charges on Wednesday against four defendants, including two Russian security services officers, in a mega data breach at Yahoo that affected at least a half billion user accounts. Acting Assistant Attorney General Mary McCord announced the indictment in Washington Wednesday.
Dmitry Dokachayev and Igor Sushchin, both FSB officers, protected, directed, facilitated, and paid criminal hackers to collect information through computer intrusions in the United States and elsewhere. They worked with co-conspirators Alexei Belan and Karim Baratov to hack into the computers of American companies providing email and internet-related services.
McCord said that the hack targeted the email accounts of Russian and U.S. officials, Russian journalists, and employees of financial services and other businesses. One of the defendants has been taken into custody in Canada. Another is on the list of the FBI's most wanted cyber criminals. The other two are in Russia, which does not have an extradition agreement with the United States. McCord said the indictment should send a warning to cyber attackers who target the United States or its entities.
We will not allow individuals, groups, nation states, or a combination of them to compromise the privacy of our citizens, the economic interests of our companies, or the security of our country.
The charges arise from a compromise of Yahoo user accounts that began at least as early as 2014. The announcement comes as federal authorities investigate Russian interference through hacking in the 2016 presidential election. But McCord said the two investigations are not related.
Our indictment doesn't allege any connection between this intrusion and the intrusions into the DNC. That's a separate investigation, and I have no comment on the president. We don't have anything that suggests in our indictment that there's any relationship between those.
Though the Justice Department has previously charged Russian hackers with cybercrime, as well as hackers sponsored by China and Iran, this would be the first criminal case brought against Russian government officials. Early results from the Netherlands say that Prime Minister Mark Rutte's party has won the most seats in Parliament, defeating that of anti-immigrant, anti-Islam nationalist Geert Wilders by a larger margin than expected. Rutte's center-right VVD party won 31 seats in the parliament, 12 more than Wilders' PVV, which shared second place with two other parties. Speaking with reporters at a victory celebration, Rutte said that the win was a rebuke of the kind of right-wing populism seen in Britain's vote to leave the European Union and Donald Trump winning the U.S. presidential election.
I think it means in the Netherlands that people have been responsive to two messages. In the first place, that we should not experiment, that we should continue the policies of recovery to make this economy stronger, and now to make people feel in their personal lives that this economy is one of the best performing economies in the Western world. And secondly, that after Brexit, after the US elections, that people have said no to another country where the domino stone of wrong side of populism will topple over.
The Green Party increased its hold on the Netherlands, going from just four seats in Parliament to 16. The Labour Party of Eurogroup President Jeroen Dijsselbloem appeared to have been punished by voters in the election, plunging from 38 seats at the last vote to just 9. Rutte has been resolute about not wanting to rule with Wilders, so that tightens the market in which he can acquire the necessary 75-seat threshold. Wilders said Wednesday night that Rutte might have won the vote, but he will still have to form a government that will have to take conservative ideas into account.
Maar nogmaals, de heer Rutte is niet van mij af. Die patriotische lente gaat ook
But again, Mr. Rutte hasn't gotten rid of me, he said. The patriotic spring continues and will start. And I'll hear if they need me and the PVV for whatever negotiations. And if that's not the case, well, he won't be rid of me just yet. We'll have even more people, I hope 19, 20 people, to form a strong opposition against the cabinet, making it difficult for them every day. The Prime Minister also likely benefited from the past week's standoff with Turkey, where the Netherlands allowed or refused to allow two Turkish ministers to speak in the Netherlands about a referendum to give Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan more executive powers. Political analyst André Kraul said that Rutte made the most of opportunities to look like he was acting to protect the Dutch people.
The whole campaign of the Prime Minister of the VVD was, look, you know, a vote for Wilders, the anti-immigrant populist, is a lost vote. He will never do anything. He sits on his couch and he just tweets around. We, on the other hand, we do something. Enters a minister from a Muslim-majority country with a headscarf, and our Prime Minister threw her out. I mean, this is your, you know, electoral campaign dream, right? You can't script this if it was a movie. So, no, it really helped Mark Rutte to take the lead and a big lead over Geert Wilders.
Kraul says that now that no party has an overwhelming majority, it will take weeks, if not months, of coalition-building talks before a new government is installed. Coming up, the U.S. Central Bank votes to raise interest rates, but what does that mean for you? And Shelley Schlender takes us to a place where hacking is a good thing. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The U.S. Central Bank raised the benchmark interest rate slightly on Wednesday, as data showed the economy moving toward full employment and inflation rising modestly. Leaders of the Federal Reserve have been debating interest rate policy for 2 days in Washington, and they decided to raise rates 0.25%. That will make mortgages and credit cards more expensive for Americans, but what will it mean for the rest of the world? To try to sort that out, I spoke with VOA economics editor Jim Randall.
One of the things that happens when you raise interest rates in this country or any other is that it tends to attract investment from the rest of the world. That tends to push up the value of your currency. That's really not what the United States needs right now, because the dollar is very strong, and the strong dollar makes it easy to import stuff, and it makes it difficult to sell U.S.-made products on the global market because it makes them more expensive. A $30,000 Chevrolet, when the U.S. dollar goes up 10%, becomes a $33,000 Chevrolet. You don't get any more car. It doesn't go any faster. It just costs you more. So that's a downside of that. The upside, and what they're really trying to do, is to keep inflation from getting out of hand. If inflation gets out of hand, it tends to be a sort of a spiral. Inflation, you know, prices go up a little here, so people demand higher wages. That pushes up prices a little more, so people demand higher wages. That gets completely out of hand sometimes. So they're trying very hard to keep prices relatively stable, because that promotes good economic growth.
Now, President Trump has emphasized the America First policy. Buy American, hire American, have the steel in the pipeline be American, even though it turned out not to be for some of them. How is this going to affect that? If we have higher interest rates here, You said that makes American goods more expensive overseas, but the world's second largest economy, China, is still going to be producing a lot of goods that Americans are going to want to buy, right?
It's very complicated. Welcome to my little world. First off, it's going to make Mr. Trump's task of trying to promote U.S. exports a little more complex, a little more difficult. Now, the interest rate didn't go up that much, so it's not going to be a huge effect. But it does make it a little more difficult to do what he wants to do. And it's probably the right thing to do. Most economists think that this is the right thing to do. Some economists argue that they waited too long. They should have done this a while ago. But in any case, it makes Mr. Trump's task a little more difficult.
Jim Randall unravels the Gordian knot of economics for us. Jim, thank you very much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, David.
As we mentioned earlier in our show, hacking has been making headlines lately, from the Yahoo charges and WikiLeaks releasing stolen documents indicating the CIA had the ability to hack into all sorts of devices. But hacking is also a synonym for tinkering, whether with computers, woodworking, or anything. Tinkerers around the world come together at hacker spaces to share tools, camaraderie, and expertise. Reporter Shelley Schlender takes us to a hacker space in Oakland, California, called Ace Monster Toys, where members lend each other a hacking hand.
This is Maple.
In his spare time, Jose hangs out with friends at Ace Monster Toys. It's a warehouse-sized club in Oakland, California, where he can use big toys like a buzzsaw to make musical toys like a guitar. The architect built this guitar from triangular scraps of highly prized purple hardwood that a carpenter had thrown away.
Then he made something epically beautiful out of trash. That's the essence to me of hacking.
Rachel McCrafty is president of Ace Monster Toys. She says Ace is a great place to hack, tinker, and collaborate. In the textile room, she shows software engineer Walt a display of quilt squares made in the beginner sewing class, then demonstrates the club's professional sewing machine with its six different spools of thread.
I'll push the button.
All right.
In another part of the building, Walt joins Jason, a sound engineer, to experiment with Jason's latest toy. It's a programmable music cube he's developed that flashes green and yellow as it changes pitch, all in a clear cube that's no bigger than the palm of your hand. Upstairs at an electrician's table, red lights flash as part of a baton-sized gizmo for scaring pets away from cars. Its creator says that he learned new ways to program gadgets, thanks to other Ace Club members.
And then whenever I run into problems, people here help me. They're very nice people.
Our teachers are volunteers. Our tool stewards are volunteers. Our board members serve as volunteers. And they're just incredibly generous.
McCrafty says the club's 150 members pay monthly dues to cover the rent and to get their hands on cool stuff, like a 3D desktop printer and a monster-sized laser cutter that can cleanly cut wood into the curvy front of an electric guitar or make something as delicate as a paper octopus. Members can use the toys, the tools, anytime day or night. McCrafty says it works out thanks to rules that emphasize communication and respect.
Respect yourself, be safe, respect the space, respect the people you're sharing with.
These values pay off, as they did for Owen and Arun. The young entrepreneurs are here every day, all day, using computers in the club's shared office space. They're programming Amazon's virtual assistant, Alexa, to be a virtual banking expert that readily answers financial questions.
What is the rate on a three-year CD?
The three-year CD rate is 1.8%. What other CD-related questions do you have?
By hanging out at Ace, Owen says they've learned more about how a high-tech probability model can enhance Alexa's virtual banking expertise.
It was actually our friend Walt. We had just met him then, and he said, "Hey, I couldn't help it over here. You guys were talking about a Bayesian classifier. Let me tell you how I use that in my current job." So I think it's pretty critical that we're in a space where people are generous with their time, but are super motivated and working on their own projects. It just creates these chance encounters.
It all makes this hackerspace greater than the sum of its tools, offering unique ways for people to play together. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender at Ace Monster Toys in Oakland, California.
And we have to say goodbye to jazz and pop producer Tommy LaPuma, who won Grammys for collaborations with Natalie Cole and George Benson. He died at the age of 80 on Wednesday. In a career spanning 6 decades, his productions won 5 Grammys, were nominated for 28 more, and saw sales of $75 million. In addition to Benson and Natalie Cole, he also worked with jazz singer and pianist Diana Krall, and he worked with Paul McCartney. His last album with Diana Krall will be released on May 5th. Rest in peace, Tommy LaPuma. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Just click on the red Listen tab and look under Our Broadcast Programs for other episodes of our show. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are at @VOA_IE. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump has signed a revised executive order on immigration, protecting the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called it a vital measure for strengthening American national security. This executive order places a 90-day ban on the issuance of new visas for citizens of 6 nations. They include Libya, Iran, Somalia, Syria, Sudan, and Yemen. 3 of these, Iran, Sudan, and Syria, are state sponsors of terrorism, said U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The other 3 have served as safe havens for terrorists, countries where the government has lost control of territory to terrorist groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. This increases the risk, said Attorney General Sessions, that people admitted here from these countries may belong to terrorist groups or may have been radicalized by them. In addition, the United States refugee program will be suspended for 120 days, and the United States will not accept more than 50,000 refugees in this fiscal year. The revised order explicitly exempts legal permanent residents and those who already have a valid visa to come to the U.S., among others. The revised executive order takes effect March 16th. Speaking to America's allies and partners around the world, Secretary Tillerson stated that this order is part of our ongoing efforts to eliminate vulnerabilities that radical Islamist terrorists can and will exploit for destructive ends. The State Department will cooperate with other federal agencies and implement these temporary restrictions in an orderly manner. The State Department will implement the provisions in this executive order that allow for the admissions of refugees when it is determined they do not pose a risk to the security or welfare of the United States, said Secretary Tillerson. We cannot compromise our nation's security by allowing visitors entry when their own governments are unable or unwilling to provide the information we need to vet them responsibly, said Attorney General Sessions. This executive order provides a needed pause so we can carefully review how we scrutinize people coming here from these countries of concern.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.